Hello and welcome to another edition of the Owl Arses podcast featuring young Paul Moran. Are you happy with that introduction now, Paul, are you?
Yeah, a bit better, like.
Yeah, I thought I'd get that right. We've we've convened this morning and we are coming off the back of Liverpool beating Atletico Madrid in their own yard. And we're going to discuss through the game a few various other bits around Liverpool at the moment, and then previewing the Man United game at the weekend. So, Paul, I'll come to you first. Looking at the lineup, what did you think about the fact that he didn't change the line? Obviously, he brought Alisson in, but most people would have thought that he'd have brought Fabinho back in, but he didn't do that, and he actually explained it before the game by saying that we haven't had any time to train in between the Watford game and today, so I've just gone with the same lineup. What did you think of that?
Again, the amount of discussion about the teams that get picked out for any team, the manager, he's picked that team and we've won the game. So I thought at the time, I thought Fabinho would play, but you don't know what he's been doing since he got to Madrid type of things. He's obviously been training and that, but he was there on his with Alisson rather than with the squad. He's explained that they've not done any training since Watford. So he's just gone with the team that he thought would do best, and then you 2-0 up after 13 minutes. So you think, oh, he's done the right thing. Obviously, he went to 2-2 at half-time, but I think we looked we were strong during the game. You know, there was certain things going wrong. I know Kate has had a lot of stick today on social media, but I think a lot of it's just people jumping on bandwagons myself. I don't know whether it's justified or not, but I certainly think you won the game, he picked the right team. That's how you'd have to look at it at the end of the day.
The Kate thing is he's Marmite for Liverpool fans, Steve, isn't he? And it puts it into perspective when you hear Jurgen Klopp after the game saying that's his fifth game in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, hey, that was one hell of a strike, is the first thing to say. And I guess that where you lose it with Naby at times is the criticism he gets is that he doesn't track back particularly well. And to a certain extent, I'd agree with that. I mean, I've said on previous podcasts that my feelings on Naby is I really feel as if there's a great player trying to get out at times. And it's good to see him get a few goals now. You know, hopefully it'll build his confidence. But I think what worries me is that Jurgen's side, if you're going to be in Jurgen's side, you've got to work really hard. You know, Jurgen expects that. That's the way that he sets us up for 11 men on the pitch to be working really hard. And at times, Naby just seems to lose that a little bit. It's a pity because he's a really good player.
He definitely is. And you can see the talent that's there, obviously. I think, just coming to you, Dad, what that first 20 minutes, we were fantastic, weren't we? Everything seemed to be going well. Did you think that it was more to do with us being brilliant or them being a little less lackluster? Because they set up obviously in a deep block and they let you have the ball and that's fine. But there certainly wasn't an awful lot of intensity. We had pretty much free reign of the pitch. I think at one point we were 72% possession. Did you think that we were brilliant or did you think that they were poor from the start?
Well, I think there was a bit of both, actually. I think we carried on playing the type of footballer, obviously, we love watching. And also, they seemed to back off a little bit. And then obviously, when we've scored the two goals, if they're going to get into the game, if they're going to do something, then they're obviously going to have a go at it. But like all sort of Spanish teams, a lot of in you know, they sort of have a go at you and sort of goad you into certain things, and certainly that came in. It's a bad part of the game. It's a bit part of the game I don't like. And then the intimidation then came in. So once they got the first goal, that was the problem. I think with Naby, you were talking about Naby before. I think he's a good player. There's a great player inside there, but I think he's a bit inconsistent. Is probably what I'd say. I mean, you know, he was caught a couple of times, but then they upped their game. So and they started throwing long balls into our half, and he really was caught napping a little bit. But that was just the way it is. And then the intimidation started, which is not good to see. But then that's probably Simeone's way of playing, I suppose, isn't it?
Paul, just generally on football, when a team goes 2-0 up and they're so dominant like we were last night, is there always a tendency to take your foot off the gas? I mean, it certainly looked like that from us. I always felt watching the game that Atletico were never going to carry on playing as passively as they did. What do you think about that?
Well, just on a 2-0 lead, they always say, don't these 2-0s a dangerous lead, which is, if you look at it in the cold light of day, it's a ridiculous statement, because would you like to be 2-0 up? Any game you play, no, it's dangerous. No, I'd rather be 2-0 up type of thing. So it's one of them things. I think teams, not talking about, as you say there, just in a general football sense, when teams go 2-0 up, especially early in the game, I think most teams do actually not sit back as such, but they think, well, we're all right here while it's 2-0. And, you know, they don't relax by any means, but they stop going forward as much. I mean, you know, you look back at that Everton game a few years ago when we beat them 5-2 in the end. We're 2-0 up and then we sit back. You know, and they get the goal 2-1, then it's 3-1, 4-1. Then we let them score again. It's not like we're letting them score, but I think teams, it's just an automatic reaction. It's like if a team's 3-0 or 4-0 up at half-time, they're not going to come out flying in the second half. They're going to think, we can play the ball around, we can turn down the intensity a little bit. I think it's just human nature. I don't think it's any tactical insight or anything. I think it's just a psychological thing. And then obviously they got the two goals quite quickly. And then, you know, we stepped it up again. And it's one of them things. My dad always used to say, I don't mention my dad a lot on these, but that's where I got most of my football stuff from. Teams can't change once they start playing a particular way. Now, we sat back a little bit, but we didn't really change how we were playing as such. And then the two goals going against you, and you can step it back up again, if you like. But it's very difficult. And, you know, 2-0. Would you like to be 2-0 up on Sunday at Old Trafford at any point in the game? You know, if it's 10 minutes or 80 minutes, oh, yeah, I'd like to be 2-0 up. It's never a lead you'd say you don't want. Obviously, the second goal going in later on can kill a team off, you know, like the Burnley game this season at Anfield. Get that second goal, you think, you know, thank God for that. You know, we sort of like, there's not going to be a late equaliser now as such. But I really do think it's a psychological thing with every team, not just Liverpool. It's across the country, across the world. When you watch any game, when a team goes 2-0 up, they do just stop playing the way they've been to go the 2-0 up, especially if they've been bombing forward as well, to go 2-0 up early on in a game.
Steve, just looking at the fact that we were 2-0 up and then we lost two goals pretty quickly, which kind of seemed like the first two attacks that they'd had, they scored for. It probably wasn't like that, but it seemed like that while you were watching the game. What did you think they changed, or what did you think we changed in terms of how we were playing and how we were dealing with them? What changed for you?
I think Paul made an interesting point. I mean, one of the thoughts that I went through after 13, 14 minutes is, Christ, we scored those goals too early. Mm. that was almost worrying me. But as Paul rightly said, you take goals whenever you take them, you know. I was really surprised for the first 20 minutes, because I think that Atletico showed what I could best describe as a lack of adventure. Mm. You know, they were sitting extremely deep. They were relying on long balls. I mean, there was a couple of incidents where maybe they should have scored on long balls. And on both occasions, I thought, it got to be offside. Mm. And then the replay showed that it was just in his own half. So clearly, what wasn't offside. They then stepped it up. I think the thing that worked in our favour last night, and I'd pay a compliment to the referee, who basically got all of the big calls right, and more to the point, he didn't fall for their snidey tactics generally. He just didn't fall for them, which we've seen with Atletico before. That tends to happen. That's the way that they play their game. In fact, at one stage, and I was thinking of Jimmy Milner, it was nice to go there to, and I'd describe it as, we almost outsnided the snides
right,
a little bit. And Jimmy Milner was sort of leading that. But I thought what we showed last night was actually more experience playing against a snidey side, because let's be honest, they are a horrible, horrible, snidey team to play against. They really, really are. You could, people say, did we deserve the win? Well, yeah, we scored 3 goals and they scored 2 goals. You know, it really is like, yeah, we deserve the win. You look at the possession statistics, I think it was 62% possession.
Let me just put on something there, Steve. Say that we do not get that third goal. We get a penalty, obviously. Say the way you're describing the game, does your assessment of the game change if we don't get that third goal, or have they equalised?
Not really, because I think a lot of our fans last night, a draw would have been a good result. Let's be perfectly honest. I mean, had we got beat, yeah, okay, maybe my assessment would have changed, but certainly not if we didn't get the third goal and got a draw. I'd almost have been quite happy with that. The fact that we got the win, it was just tremendous. Absolutely tremendous result. I mean, going to that stadium to play Atletico in their own backyard is not an easy thing to do for any European side. It really isn't. I thought we managed it. We managed the game reasonably well. We competed with them in their sort of snidey tactic. I don't think we're anything like as snidey as them. And I'm stunned at the amount of time. Their most effective weapon is surrounding the referee and complaining.
Oh, they love surrounding the referee, don't they?
They just never stop.
Yeah.
It really is.
Dad, one of the things that Paul often says on these podcasts, and I always pick up on it, is it's just something so simple, but it's spot on. He always says, we just need to move the ball quicker. And certainly after they got their 2 goals and we got in after half time, he's obviously had a talking to them and Fabinho comes on, but I'd still got the impression that we didn't move the ball quick enough. A lot of it was quite passive. It was quite almost lethargic. I certainly think that Trent Alexander-Arnold suffered as a result of that at some stage. He had a 10-minute spell before he got dragged off where he was very, very lethargic. What did you think? Do you think it was down to something as simple as that, just moving the ball quicker, or do you think there was other things at play?
I think what Steve said before is that you'd have taken a draw, and you would have. I'd have taken a draw with no injuries to our side. That's what I would have done. I mean, the fact that we actually got a win in the end. We were fortunate, and obviously the sending off. I've seen that. He actually clips his ear and he's standing up. So, I mean, how high is that? So he got obviously, unusually, the referee was really, really good. And it favoured us, if you like. I suppose they're not going to be happy with the fact that obviously they thought they had a penalty and then it was chalked off with VAR. I think in the second half, we started so well. Then we just sort of, I don't know, we dropped down a gear, if you like, and because maybe it's just a game where we thought we'd obviously got it in the bag. But, I mean, I'd have taken a draw before with no injuries. The fact that it worked out as it did and the referee had thought, obviously we're going to say that because it went our way, but to come away from there with that intimidation, that play acting, although very surprised he didn't put Suarez on earlier or even play him. I think that would have been, I was thinking, oh, if Suarez comes on, you know, that could be difficult. But for some unknown reason, he didn't play Suarez. But I was expecting him to play, because no matter what other people think about him, he's a good player.
Yeah, he's a very good player. Paul, I'm going to come to you on this. So let's talk about the actual incidents. Now, you're probably going to have a go at me here, but I think the sending off's harsh. I think it's a yellow card, but I think it is harsh because he's not looking. He just has his foot up there and then Bobby's face tends to be there. I think our penalty is a penalty, but I also think their penalty is a penalty. So what do you think?
Well, I thought our penalty was a definite penalty at the time.
100%.
You know, there's not, I don't think there's any question whether that's a not an incident, not to discuss type of thing, but there was no question because the fella's not even looking at the ball. He's looking where he's going, obviously, but he just wipes him out. I mean, there's no question that that's a penalty. There's again, it's one of them where it's against you, as given against you, it's never a pen. And if it's one that you get, it was like a 50% of our penalty. It was, you know, if ours is 100%, that's a 50% challenge. It can be given. I was talking to my son on the phone and WhatsApp during the game. And I said to him, once the referee's gone to the monitor, he's going to change his mind. Because that seems to be how VAR works. If he gives the penalty, but then if he goes to the monitor, he's been told by the VAR that it's wrong and he needs to go and change it, but he needs to go and see it himself to change it. I think that's what happened.
To the referee, he had a really good look at it. Like he watched it a good 6 or 7 times. He was there.
There's always a bit of a worry because you start thinking and he's going to start seeing things that aren't actually there.
But that's what it's there for him to have a second look. And he's had a really good look at it. Like the other week, what was the game the other week where he literally looked at it once and then and gave the decision?
I think that was us, wasn't it? I can't remember. I try not to think about VAR once it's happened. It's something that's... I think again, you say it's a blight on football. We got a win last night because of it, because he would have given that pen under normal circumstances and not being allowed to query it type of thing, if you like. He wouldn't have changed it. But just quickly on the sending off, I honestly, I know you're saying he's not looking at that, but there's a thing I always say when people do incidents like that. If you watch the player who does the foul, call it a foul. If he does that accidentally, they immediately put the hands up because it's not deliberate. Now, Griezmann didn't. When he did it, he didn't react. He didn't. If you do it on purpose, you don't react. I think he knew what he was doing. I'm not sure he meant to catch him in the face particularly, but it's dangerous play. If you look at the rules of the game, any action that puts an opponent in danger of injury is a sending off. It's serious foul play. He's kicked him in the face. You know, if we're playing Man United on Saturday, if Sadio Mane kicks Maguire in the face, apart from the fact it might wake Maguire up, but if he kicks him in the face, he's going to get sent off. And you couldn't sit in home or at the mat if you're lucky to go and say, well, why has he been sent off? Why did you get sent off? If it's like a Sunday league game, why did you get sent off or kick someone in the face when they were standing up? Okay. There's not really much explanation needed. You know, I didn't pull someone back or clip someone's heels when they were clean through. You know, you kick someone in the face. It's very difficult to explain how you've done it. Unless he's lying on the floor.
I just remember the Sadio Mane one, which I thought was unfortunate when we played City years ago.
Yeah, well, he's looking at the ball coming over his shoulder, Mane. Yeah. The goalie's out. The argument there is the goalie's outside the area. Yeah. So should Mane be expecting the goalie to be outside the area? It's one of them things. Because if you look at Mane's one, have you ever watched that again? He does that straight away because he doesn't know the goalie's there until he actually, you know, kicks him on the neck type of thing. You know, I thought that was a sending off, to be fair, because you can't sort of say, well, I didn't think anyone would be there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like throwing a punch and then hitting someone and saying, well, I didn't know anyone was there. You know, if you take it to an extreme example type of thing.
If you
kick someone in the face or above the chest height and they're not lying on the floor or crouching down, it's difficult to explain how you did it. Because you've sort of got to be expecting someone to be there at the argument. I didn't know he was there, but Griezmann's looking right at him. And he didn't react. Now, I don't know why he'd suddenly do that, but it's a definite sending off in my eyes.
Steve, and I'll let you talk on this subject. All of you can have your little say on this. But Steve, Mo Salah actually comes out of the goal. It was funny, I went for a walk this morning and I totally forgot that Mo Salah got 2 goals. Because I'd almost for some reason it dawned on me while I was walking and listening to a podcast that Mo Salah scored 2 last night. There's been a lot written and spoken about Mo in the last few weeks. What does he mean to you? How do you put him in the league table of Liverpool players, for example?
He's been with us, what, 4 years? I think during that time, right through that time, he's been outstanding. I think what's happened just recently, and yet you're always going to get a bit of hype, but what's happened just recently is he's moved up levels from outstanding to just being sensational, whatever word you want to you describe. I mean, the couple of goals that he's got. Funnily enough, in the Watford game, I remember when he was wriggling away there, as I was watching it on TV, I was thinking to myself, Christ, he's going to do it again. Thinking back to his goal against, he's going to do it again. And indeed, that he did. And I suppose that probably brings us on to what's going to happen with Mo in the future. I the way I look at it is, if Mo Salah was playing for any other team in the world, in Europe, wherever it may be, we probably couldn't afford to buy him because he would be that expensive. We probably couldn't afford to buy him. We've got him here. He always strikes me, because he's always smiling as well. That's the other thing. Whenever he's interviewed, he's got this big toothy sort of grin. It seems to me as if he's really very happy with us. And he wants to play. Now, I don't know what goes on in the background. I really don't know. But I think comparing him to other players, he's better than Salah was when he was with us. And Salah was pretty, sorry, not Salah, I mean Suarez, forgive me.
Right, okay.
Can you edit that bit out?
No, that's saying him there,
he's better than Suarez was, you know, for that 3 years that Suarez was with us. He's just on a level as a goal scorer above anything possibly that we've ever seen. Certainly in my time watching us since the mid-60s, that's how good he is. Whether he can maintain the level that he's at, you know, for the remainder of this season and next season or whenever it may be, I don't know. All I would say is that at the moment, he's on a plane which nobody else is.
Okay. Dad, how do you assess, you know, since he's come in, and where do you put him in the league table of Liverpool greats?
He's got to be right there at the top. But obviously, I did a blog about him separately, didn't I? So I have some opinions about it. My own opinion is that he does look very happy at Liverpool, and I think he said that as well. But obviously, his agents aren't happy. His agents will be telling him that, you know, they can get him. Well, I think they're quoting £400,000 a week. FSG will not pay that. I think they'll pay a bit more. I think maybe our other team members who have contributed highly to the way that Salah's playing now. Salah has to, and I wrote this tonight, Salah has to think, now, if I go somewhere else, am I a better player? Am I the player I am now because of the people I've got around me who are actually feeding me? And, you know, we've got some magnificent players at Liverpool. They play the type of football that suits his game. Now, he could go anywhere, but then his agent would be saying, well, it won't make any difference, because if you're going to be on £400,000 a week, it doesn't really make any... It's the money, isn't it? Now, depends on whether he wants to be, you know, even more legendary than he is. He certainly could do that at Liverpool. And he has to ask himself this question. Am I this good because I'm that good? Or am I this good because the players around me are so good that they've helped me get to the position that I'm in? And do I want the money more than I want to be the top player? It's entirely up to him. And I think we've only got to look at Coutinho and now Wijnaldum, who's not happy. And there's a few more who've left, who've got to that level, gone to another club and haven't reproduced it because the conditions are not the same. You know, the conditions, the way that we play or even the way the club is, the way the fans are. We contribute to that because he's got a fan base there that is, well, I'd say second to none. But he could go somewhere else and, okay, he might get the money and sign the contract, but he might not maintain the standard he's got. I think he is that good, but he needs to be very careful what he does.
Mm. Paul, what do you think? Where does it all sit with you?
About Salah, in particular, yeah. as a Liverpool player through the ages type of thing. Well, I never really do this, you know, this top 10 things. When anyone says to me, what's your favourite Liverpool 11? I always just pick the 78-79 team. Mm-hmm. You know, as a team. Now, you can have your individual players. Obviously, Kenny played in that team.
You say you're not an Owl ass.
78-79, I was 17 at the time. Wasn't I'm still in my team.
Let me just do the maths. Hang on.
I'm 60 in January, so I can be an Owl ass in January. There, I'm officially an Owl ass from January. Got my bus pass and that. But you watching Salah there, you know, obviously your home games, you watch him there and watching him on the telly and the away games. I think we're getting, as a general fan base, he's getting a lot of plaudits at the moment. He's scoring fantastic goals. The danger would be that you get not spoilt by him, but the danger is if he doesn't do it against United, it's like, well, Salah never scored. Now, he scored in 9 games, but you can't let what he's doing spoil what he might do in the future. You know, there's going to be games he doesn't score in, and you don't want people saying, no, Salah's not scored. Salah's, you know, missed a chance. He's done this or he's done that. So not being spoilt by him as a general fan base, but it's just like you can't expect him to do what he's doing now every game. Now, the fact that he does seem to be doing it every game is fantastic for us. You know, that goal last night, and by the way, how he got 2 goals last night is a mystery, because if I was Milner, I'd be definitely claiming that first one, because he deliberately flicked it and the flick took it in. So there's no, if that's a defender, it's Salah's goal. But once that's Milner, that for me was Milner's goal last night.
BT Sports looked at it and it hasn't actually touched Milner.
It touched someone, didn't it? It touched a defender.
Yeah, just went in straight in. It went in off the defender.
I thought Milner, because it's on the live score. It changed from Salah to Milner.
Yeah, and then it changed back to Salah.
Oh, fair enough then. I should have watched it again, and I haven't watched it enough, obviously. Yeah. I thought Milner, especially the way Milner reacted as well, because he reacted like he touched it.
Yeah, but Milner's a shit house. We know that, so.
Well, he was top shit house last night, because he kept us in that with them, because we didn't get overpowered by their tactics. I mean, to be honest with you, the going round, just quickly, the Atletico, going round the referee, I thought that got stopped. I thought that was something that was stopped by the lovely UEFA mandate that you're not allowed to do that. The referee should just start giving yellow and red cards if he's surrounded like he was, but they don't seem to do it. But I think it's a numbers thing, because you'd have to send 2 or 3 of them off, but I mean, his son was funny last night. It was Jimenez has become his number one most hated player in the world ever, just on that one performance last night, the Uruguayan who plays for Atletico. My son was scathing about him when he spoke to us. He was, can't use the words. He said shit house before, which obviously don't like swearing on the podcast, but my son, that was the most minor description of Jimenez last night. But just with Salah, going back to Salah, he's a fantastic player. If you said to me, write down your top 10 Liverpool players that I've watched since the late 60s, which is 1969, my first game, he'd have to be in the top 10 now, you know, for actually watching players live. Again, as you can go back and say, you know, likes of top 10 players ever, you say Billy Liddle and people like that. I never seen Billy Liddle play, unfortunately. So for players I've seen, Salah would have to be in the top 10, if not the top 5, to be honest with you. And certainly as a forward, he's in the top 3 forwards I've seen. Mm. So you can't say fair.
Just to disclaim, when I labelled James Milner as a shithouse,
I mean, and in a good sort of way,
the greatest of respects.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's
and affection actually, because I love a shithouse more than anything.
That's because he's our shithouse.
Yeah, totally. Steve, just before we leave the Salah thing, as our resident accountant, how do you assess the contract situation? I know you mentioned it briefly, but what do you think that the challenges are there?
he's going to have his agent in his ear, as Ed said. It's I don't like agents, but an agent's responsibility is to his client, not to the club. And an agent's responsibility should be to balance his advice to his client. So as Ed said there, I would hope that his agent is saying, okay, it's not just about money. Because at the end of the day, there's only so many Ferraris you can drive or yachts that you can sail on. You know, once you've got one of each, do you really need any more?
Or hospitals you can build.
Or hospitals you can build in his particular case, because he's very, very philanthropic in that way, which is superb. The contract situation. I hope he would take a balanced view. I hope his agent would advise him as such. I mean, Ed, you mentioned $400,000 a week. He may well be worth it. And if Ronaldo is worth £510,000 a week, which I believe he's getting at United, certainly Mo Salah, you would argue, is worth £400,000 a week. Although I'm just going back to a podcast you did recently, Gav, where the figure of 300 was mentioned.
That was David Lynch, and I'd asked him what he heard, and he said that 300,000. Now, I was surprised at that. I thought it would be north of that figure, but I mean, that doesn't seem too unreasonable, does it, Steve?
No, I but certainly reasonable in my mind. I think it comes back to the fact that if he was for sale, we as a club probably couldn't afford to buy him. You just couldn't afford to buy him because he would be that valuable. You know, you would be talking at a number which is in excess of the Neymar fee, I would guess, which was what, 180 million euros or something, was it? Something like that, and ridiculous wages. So I think that what we need to do, I think there's possibly a deal to be done with Mo Salah, because he does seem very, very happy doing what he's doing, playing for the club that he's playing. And I've also heard, I think it was Carragher that said he doesn't get the love from the fans. I just don't know where that comes from. I really don't know where that comes from, because to my mind, he does. Hey, it's expensive. I think footballers are hopelessly, ridiculously overpaid generally, but hey, that's the game we're playing. That's the pitch we're playing. It's market forces. It really is. And if we want to compete at the level that I think we want to compete at, that's the going rate that you probably are going to have to pay.
Steve, is there a diddle to be done at all in terms of paying him in a different way so that you maintain your wage structure and you keep everyone else happy? But is there some way that they can do it where he gets 400 grand a week, but it's not actually recorded as 400 grand a week? It's done on bonus payments or whatever.
Well, there will be. And some of the figures that are bandied around, of course, you know, they do lead you to believe that the guy just picks up X £100,000 a week in, week out. And Paul, you probably know more about this than I do. But, you know, the way that a deal is structured, a package is structured, can be based on incentive, appearances, God knows, everything, goals scored, whatever it may be. I don't know how they're structured. I think what you're getting at is probably the legality of doing it. Now, it can be done. There's accountants who are far better than me, who understand all about offshore, etc., etc. You have to be very, very careful, because there is this very fine line that exists between tax evasion and tax avoidance. One of them is legal. Avoidance is legal. If you put money into an ISA, you are avoiding tax in a totally legal way. Evasion is highly illegal, and I guess that's what they have to be really careful on.
If you're enjoying this video so far, please show your support for the Ken 7 channel by clicking the subscribe button, the like button, and also clicking the bell for future notifications. If you could also share the video on your Twitter and Facebook account, that will show YouTube's algorithm that you like our content. Do you know about Ken 7 merchandise? The link is in the description of this video. We have premium fanwear for fans covering Liverpool, Celtic and Scotland, and it's
fan wear for young and old. So we have t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, caps, mugs, you name it, we've got it. Just something else to remember, every purchase that is made on our website, we donate to the Marina Dalgliesh Appeal. So you're helping a great cause as well.
Mm. So you mentioned the weekend there, Steve. We've obviously got a massive game. Paul, I'm going to come to you. We're playing United on Sunday. They are in a strange period of form, which, to be honest, has been lovely to watch from afar. Going into the game, what are your thoughts?
Honestly, over the however many years we've been going to watch them and doing that, I've never, ever really been confident going to Old Trafford before the game. No matter what's happening, they just think they, you know, talking about people stepping the game up. They won't want us going there beating them like that 3-0 a few years ago when Gerrard and Suarez scored. If that happens, or last season was 4-2 last season, I think, from memory. I think we should beat them. If you're going there to play another team in the form that United are in, you would think that we would win. You know, you think we'll go there and overpower them in effect, because that's what we're doing to teams at the moment. We just need to be on our game from the start. Again, you talk about the passing thing, get two passes, two touch, control, pass, move, and then get them turning. Get my favourite player, Maguire, turning if he can. He doesn't even turn now, does he? He just stands facing the same direction, no matter what's happening around him. He doesn't even try and turn around now. He just still faces the one way and then blames everyone. I mean, he was blaming people for that goal Leicester scored last week. He blames someone else. And he had the ball thrown out to him and lost it.
How can you
and
blame
went back in, teamed and zoomed
in. Giving him the ball?
Yeah, and he'd lost it by doing a mad 45-degree turn on it, but he didn't need to. Lost it. Tielemann zooms it into the top corner, or, you know, helps it into the top corner. And then Maguire's pointing at everyone else in the middle, because you can see all the defenders like looking at him going, you know, that was your fault. It's what you're blaming us for. But again, hopefully he plays on Sunday and they all get in and around him. You know, the three forwards or whoever it is, whether it's Bobby, Mane and Salah, or whether Jota plays from the start, to add that little bit of pace against United's back four, because it seems to be between Firmino and Jota for that third spot. Now, he might want the pace side of it and then bring Bobby on later on, or he might do it the other way around. And whichever team he picks, you know, that's the formation we'll play. It's easy to talk about different formations. I think Firmino will certainly play on Sunday. I don't think there's any question of that. Who plays, who's fit? Anyone get injured last night? Has anyone got niggled from last night? You don't know. You just have to see what he does. But certainly, I say this a lot, and it probably bores people now, but if we play to our capacity there, we're better than them. So we'll beat them. If something goes wrong, then that's football and that's what happens. But you've just got to go into it with all guns blazing, for me.
Dad, I come to you with a fair amount of trepidation, because I've been on record before as saying that, and this worries me a little bit, that your hatred for Man United is probably bigger than your love for Liverpool. So, and it's always a game that you watch from behind the sofa. So, how are you feeling going into this game, bearing in mind that they're not in a good run of form?
I, as you know, I never liked the games against Man United. My one worry, the big worry at the moment is they can redeem themselves with one win against us on Sunday. They'll know that. I mean, and if Solskjaer, if he's no good, I mean, which I don't think he's that great a manager, but if he's saying to them, now listen, today, if you can win this, all that criticism that we're getting from our own fans will go away with one win.
Yeah.
And that just worries me a little bit. And I just worry about how much last night's game has taken out of our team. Hopefully,
I'll stick with you, Dad. I mean, don't forget they're playing tonight. So we've got 24 on them.
Yeah. I forgot about that, yeah. So they obviously will have a problem from whatever tonight's game turns up. So I'm hoping that obviously we continue in the same vein, and we couldn't be. I don't think our morale could be any higher than it actually is. Mm. So I'm hoping that will take us through. But then with me, I'm always thinking, well, maybe, you know, what about the referee?
Yes.
It's
Withenshaw's most famous Altrincham fan.
No. Yeah.
It's Anthony.
He's from Greater Manchester, isn't he?
Why did he do that?
I don't know. So that's the referee. And that worries me. Listen, you know me, with Man United, everything worries me. Yeah. So that's another worry to think about. But listen, if maybe Salah will just go through it, and if we can play our game, we're a better team, a much better team than they are. Mm. But I just, you know, at the back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, it's obviously at Old Trafford. I'd be happier if it was at Anfield with our fans there. Mm. But I'm sure that all lads will give it a go. Just hoping, quite frankly. Mm. But I never like Man United games at all. It's not that I hate them. I don't like them. But I believe there are some United fans.
Okay. Steve, they're a strange unit because they strike me as a collection of individuals, very talented individuals, and it's difficult to see for me what they're all about. And the danger with that is that on any one day you get 9 out of 10 performances from 4 of their players, and they'll steamroll you because they're just world class players: Fernandes, Pogba, Ronaldo. I mean, I love Greenwood for them. I'd love Greenwood to be playing for us. He's absolutely fantastic at such a young age. He's got a big goal in him as well. What, you know, what do you think about that?
I think what you've just hit the nail on the head is the difference in quality between the managers of our respected clubs. Because I think that, due respect to Solskjaer, that is his job. If to have a group of players who have all got individual talents and sort of weave them all together to produce a unit that's greater than the sum of its parts, that's what Jurgen Klopp does a particularly good job at, to actually weave together our talents to produce an output which is greater than the sum of the parts. I mean, like your dad, I hate this game. I hate this game with a passion. In fact, sometimes, Gav, I think, as you know, I don't watch it. I
know you've been for a walk before now.
No, I go out on my bike for 2 hours.
On your bike, yeah.
I just go ride around on my bike for 2 hours just to avoid it, and then come back and don't take a phone with me, don't take anything with me, and just come back and, you know, sort of have a look on Red and White Cop or something to see the result. I don't even look on the BBC to get the results. But hey, we, at the moment, we're so much better than them. We really are. If we're anything like, we're at a level way above Manchester United at the moment. They've got great individual players, some of them anyway. Some of them are overrated. Some of them are too old. But with Jurgen will have us all believing. He'll have our side believing that how much better than we are, and we'll go there. You can never underwrite a result. Anything can happen there. Nice 4-2 would be good, a bit like last season.
Just before I let you go, I'll come to you, Paul, first. It's 6 years recently since Jurgen Klopp took over. And I just wonder what you thought is in summary of his tenure since he took over.
Very briefly, discussing 6 years. When he come, I was happy he come. I thought he was the right choice at the time. We've won the league for the first time in 30 years under him. We've won the European Cup. We're challenging for things every year. I don't think anyone could have done any better than he's done. And the way he deals with stuff as well. Even that journalist last night, the journalist was trying to get him in the shit for what happened with Simeone, and Jurgen just shot him down. I know it annoys all the fans of other teams that he talks to people like that. But I'd rather he did that than sat back and accepted it. So you can't, if you find, I can't find any faults with how he runs the team, how he's done for 6 years. You change things, of course, because you'd have had that one when we got the 97 points, we'd have won the league rather than coming second to City, like in any normal season. But you can't knock it with, all right, you say with the League Cup and FA Cup, we don't make much of a shape. But certainly, if you're going to talk to the main two, the league and the European Cup, then he's won them both. And we're in a position to challenge for them and hopefully win them again this season. So you can't really ask for anything more.
Yeah, no, it's a good analogy and a good summary. Dad, you know, what does he mean to you, Jürgen? I know you're a big fan and you've seen the club develop from when you were a boy up to now. And how does he sit with great managers of the past for you?
I think he's obviously up there at the best. I just like his personality and I like his humility as well. I mean, Jürgen's got that and he just comes out with some of the sayings, which are not only is he a great football manager, but he's a great person. He's a great human being.
Yeah.
And I think if you were a friend of his, a personal friend of his, you'd be a very lucky person to have someone as good as him as a friend.
Mm. Steve?
We talked a lot about Mo Salah earlier on and how good he is at the moment. I think that over the last 6 years, our most important signing has been Jürgen Klopp. I just love the man, as you know. I have this vision of Jürgen. He's just such a character as well. I've got this idea that he rides to the ground on a Harley Davidson. And he leaves it parked under the main stand or something. He strikes me as that type of character. Paul, you've talked about his achievements there, you know, and you can add to those achievements another couple of European finals during that tenure,
yeah.
a 99-point season, a 97-point season. Every other club in the world would want Jürgen Klopp as their manager. That's how good he is. Just like every other club in the world would want Mo Salah at the moment. I hesitate to say he's a modern-day Bill Shankly, and Paul, you could take massive issue with me on that, because both of them, in their own way, have been fantastic for Liverpool Football Club in totally different eras. Shanks was absolutely right for his era. Jürgen is absolutely right for the current era.
Mm. Brilliant. Good stuff, guys. Yeah. Well, listen, thanks, lads. Thanks very much for your time. If you're watching this on YouTube, don't forget to give us a hit the subscribe button, hit the like button. And if you've got any comments, let me know and I'll get the lads to come back to you. Boys, thanks very much for your time. And we'll see you on the next one in a few weeks. Cheers.
Okay.
Cheers.
Thanks, though.